Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Hey, welcome back into the House of Mystery, and this is the time for the interview. Now today we have the author of When Truth Mattered, and it's the Kent State Shootings 50 Years Later, and that's Robert Giles. Thank you for being here, Bob.
You're welcome. I'm very happy to have an opportunity to talk about When Truth Mattered on your program.
So what encouraged you to write When Truth Mattered?
Well, I've been living with this story for 50 years. I was managing editor of the Akron Beacon Journal in 1970 and directed the coverage. And so I have lived with the story, thought about it, talked to people about it, but I never thought about writing it until last year or two, when some of my author friends here in Traverse City, Michigan, started to tell me that I needed to tell this story because, in part, most of the people who worked with me at the newspaper have died. And I had one of the last institutional memories. So that was an inspiration. And, of course, the fact that it's been 50 years and there was a commemoration schedule that's now been canceled to mark that sad event, and I wanted to be able to tell how a great journalism story played into the public understanding of what happened at Kent State.
So maybe refresh the memory, and we've got a lot of younger listeners too, that May 1970 was a long time ago for them, and they probably weren't around. What exactly happened?
The Kent State story begins with President Nixon's speech announcing that he was sending troops into Cambodia. This occurred during the middle of the week before May 4th. It set off riots and demonstrations around the country on college campuses. And that was true at Kent State. Students had their own riots. They burned down the ROTC building on Saturday night. The governor, James Rhodes, came to town. And then on Monday, they planned a demonstration against the war. The governor issued a decree that said, there will be no gatherings on campus, peaceful or otherwise. And one of the funny sidelights about that is that somebody said, Governor, what do you consider a protest? And he said, two people walking together. So, you know, there was a lot of confusion about the meaning of the governor's statement. But on Monday, the demonstration evolved. The students were on the campus. They were yelling at the National Guard, giving them the finger, tossing a few rocks and stones. And the guard pushed them away and followed them, and then basically thought that they had done their job of dispersing the students. And many of the students thought that, too. So as the guard was returning to its bivouac area, all of a sudden several of the members turned and fired at the students. They killed four, they wounded nine, and that became a really stark message that the Vietnam War had come home.
So now you decided in this book that you were going to tell the what and why. So why did they shoot people?
Nobody knows the answer to that. The guard officers and some of the guardsmen claimed afterwards that they felt their lives were in danger because the students were throwing rocks and pressing in on them. In our reporting, we basically disproved that claim. So that was one of the things that we exposed that has created this our ability to say there was no reason for the guard to shoot at these kids. And of course, when you think about it, they killed them. Several people said to me, they killed our children. And no one has been held accountable, and there was no justice in this. You know, Americans value the system of justice. Well, there was no justice in this case. So all of that reality stayed with me for 50 years. And I thought that the journalism the Beacon Journal did was great journalism, and the country needs to know about that. At a time when the press is under attack and when truth-telling has become very important.
So that's kind of alludes to the title of When Truth Mattered. You talk about how it's been unchallenged and unchanged for five decades. How do you apply that to now? Can you trust the news, and can you trust what you hear and see now?
If you go to the right sources of news, I think you get a truthful and honest report. But there are other voices that are trying to tell a different story. And when you're dealing with something as serious as this virus, you will encounter people who have false claims. They want to promote some commercial sale of a new cure or something like that. There are a lot of opportunities for misinformation or disinformation from people who have as their purpose to do that. So it takes a very good, rigorous reporting. Journalists who have paid attention, who are knowledgeable about the disease or the virus, and who have dependable sources they can rely upon, and those are the kinds of news sources that today's viewers, readers, listeners have to depend on to get a clear picture of what is happening and what is not happening.
So do you think that the media has changed? Like 50 years ago in 1970, when the media sources, newspapers and television back then, were broadcasting about Kent State and the shooting there and things like that, when you compare that to today, do you find that the mainstream media, the network media and papers that survived, have really changed, or are they still doing the same job?
Well, in some way, they're doing the same job if they adhere to the values that are at the core of their work. But if you think about the kind of journalism that was being done in 1970, you had three big networks, you had a couple of national newspapers, and you had radio, and you had a very strong local news report. The value of local news was central to how people got their news back in 1970. If Kent State had happened tomorrow, social media would become the dominant way that people get their information. There would have been protesters and witnesses and people who were opposed to the protesters all carrying iPhones. And they would have recorded that terrible event, and that would have been at the heart of the original reporting. And then after the dust settled, so to speak, the mainstream media and their own values would have come into play, and you would have begun to get a more accurate and complete account of what went on. But during the early hours when social media was dominating the reporting, a lot of misinformation would have become established in the public mind. And that would have been hard to overcome. But the local papers like ours would have stayed true to their values and would have given the public a story that was as truthful as they possibly could.
Yeah, with social media now and everyone's access to it and both broadcasting it and listening and watching it, how is it that we can regulate this, or should we, and what can we do to really protect ourselves from fake news, so to speak?
Well, we can't regulate it. The Constitution and the First Amendment prevents that. But what we have to hope is, A, that you get leading editors, leading news directors who are wedded to the core values of journalism, accuracy, truth, and can bring coverage that will be tell the honest story. And over time, I believe that doing it the right way will build the trust that you have to have between your viewers, your audience, and your news organization. And I think that my belief always has been that the marketplace will determine how the information is received and how it is acted on. So that if you had a story like Kent State, and you had a newspaper that was intensely well prepared, had covered demonstrations over several years at Kent State, that they would have built up a trust with their reading audience that would have believed and accepted what the paper said was the best version available of the truth. And they also would have given the paper an acknowledgement that their stories were the effort that went into their stories was acceptable. They trusted that effort. And so over time, the truth would out. It's much more difficult today because you have the news has been politicized, the press is under attack. There are well-organized institutions that are trying to demean the role of the press, that politics is so much engaged in trying to dismiss the value of what serious journalists and serious journalist organizations are attempting and, in many cases, succeeding in doing.
You know, back in 1970, when the Kent State shooting happened, was there the same type of, conspiracy theories and stories that were coming out of that were going?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Around the country as well. I'm sure not as rampant as it does with the internet now, but was there still that kind of underground?
Well, there were a lot of claims that the communists were behind the demonstrations across campuses against the war. So that was one element. There was in the case of Kent State, there was that conspiracy theory was being mentioned by people who opposed the student demonstrations. They wanted to blame it on the Students for Democratic Society or the Black United Students or other organizations that were opposed to the war and opposed to their way of looking at politics and the world. There also were some claims about the cause of the shootings that our newspaper exposed. One of them was that there was a sniper. The National Guard commanders almost immediately after the shootings, during all the pandemonium that resulted from that terrible moment, tried to claim that there had been a sniper who had fired on the guard and that's why they turned and shot. Well, we did an investigation that disproved that claim of a sniper, and basically that argument went away. But it was all part of a detailed effort by the National Guard and to some degree by the university as well as the governor, who wanted to shift the blame from the guard and lay it on the protesters. One of the major stories that we published several weeks after, it was actually in July, we got a copy of a summary of a report by the Federal Bureau of Investigation that confirmed that the guards' lives were not endangered. They did not have to shoot to control and scatter the crowd. So that was a blockbuster story. It went all over the country. J. Edgar Hoover, who was head of the FBI, got involved with Jack Knight, who owned our paper. It was quite a story, but in fact, it was, and what was so stunning about it was you had a major federal investigating agency like the FBI criticizing the performance and the behavior of another government agency, the Ohio National Guard. And that set up a conflict in the minds of many people. We got letters and phone calls from people who were canceling the paper on the basis of that story. They would say, "How dare you? How dare you criticize the National Guard in this way?" So the fact was that there was a heavily, deeply divided public in 1970 over the Vietnam War, and the outspoken students and others who were protesting the war, and it led to a widespread outrage that was prevalent almost everywhere. So when you have a singular event like Kent State, it tended to focus all of the anger and all of the opposition on that one story. And of course, that's part of what I'm trying to tell in my book.
So when you talk about that deep divide back in 1970 and over the war, is it sort of like what the divide is now today over politics, so to speak, like Trump and anti-Trump? And do you find it very comparable?
Well, in some ways it's comparable simply because the press is part of what's being argued over. But in 1970, you had a single tragic event. There were other demonstrations made for a extended protest around the country about the war, about the draft, and so on. But there was no singular event today, except perhaps the developing story over the virus. We'll see how that plays out in terms of the government and the press, and whether the country eventually comes to depend on serious reporting by the press to give them the true story of what's happening in our hospitals, in our states, at the White House, and our national government. Up until that, I would say there's been no singular event like there was at Kent State. Well, what has happened in the current time has to do more with a political effort to demean the press and use the press as a target for political purpose. That's different from a situation in which four students were killed.
How did the groups like the National Guard back in 1970 actually get their theories out, like the kind of like when you say they were trying to turn the opinion against the students? How did they spread that kind of rumor back then? Because there was no internet.
No, there wasn't. That came from interviews. Our reporters confronted the guard commanders and their leading officers. And how did this happen? What happened? And that's when the claim was expressed that there had been a sniper. That was the first one. And then the other claim immediately was, well, our soldiers felt their lives were in danger. And under military practice, a soldier is permitted to shoot if he feels his life is in danger. Well, we published, and there were three young student photographers who took iconic photographs that have become very famous. I'm sure you're familiar with the one by John Philo of the young woman with her arms in the air screaming over the dead body of Jeff Miller. Well, there were several pictures that had equal power. And what those pictures, as I explain in my book, what those photographs do is demonstrate that the students were nowhere near the guardsmen in a way that could be said their lives were being threatened. So that's another part of the, if you want to call it, exposés that came out of the journalism, the three student photographers who shot these wonderful photographs, revealing photographs, that have helped establish the truth that the guardsmen were really not endangered by the students. The students were expressing their First Amendment right to be demonstrate in opposition to the war. And the guard should have been protective of that. And in trying to break up the rally, they also should have followed the first dictum of crowd control, which is do no harm. So that's how we looked at it then, now, and then, that in our relentless search for the truth, these are several attempted cover-up actions that the guard took. Mostly it was the guard that took and to try to lay the blame on the protesters.
So in 1972, I mean, things were in a kind of an unrest as well. Like, things were not, like a lot of people talk now, that so many things are happening and the world's ending and there's all this upset and panic and all this stuff. But things were happening a lot in the late 60s and early 70s as well, which people had the same feeling. Wasn't that kind of...
There were a lot of demonstrations on college campuses in the late 70s. There were also the urban riots. You had the Detroit riot, the Newark riot. And those were singular events. But the protests against the war that took place on the college campuses, you had Columbia and you had Harvard and you had other places, these were all done relatively peacefully. Nobody was killed. And that's a tipping point in trying to understand why the focus has been on Kent State for 50 years. The other places, Harvard, they took over the university administration building and did other things, and the police were involved and so on. But those demonstrations were carried out peacefully, and so relatively peacefully. And so now you have a singular event where American boys in the National Guard shot and killed four students.
Now, I want to be clear, too. Like, those four were never charged or sent to jail, or nobody ever was.
Well, of course, the dead students, two of the dead students were on their way to class. They were not involved in the protest. Two of the dead students, we have photographs in the book of, they were part of the group that was yelling, stick the pigs and so on, but basically that they were trying to get, the students were trying to get the guard to leave. The students were really upset because they considered the National Guard to be intruders on their campus. They thought that this is our campus. We have a right to protest against the war and the draft. And the National Guard has no business invading our campus and telling us that we can't have a First Amendment Act demonstration. So those were some of the elements there that gave the special nature of this demonstration the cachet that it's had for 50 years.
So what do you hope people walk away with and get from the book when they read it?
Well, I hope it gives them a sense of how a single local newspaper found the truthful evidence that has framed the public understanding of this tragedy for a half century. Also, I hope that the book will help give closure to a tragedy that the courts and the community could never achieve. I think the book is a powerful reminder that truth did matter.
Well, it's a fantastic book, and we will have it on our website so people listening can just do one click and pick up the book.
Thank you.
Now our guest is the author, Robert Giles, and the book is called When Truth Matters.
I'd like to compliment you for the insights and the preparation that has obviously gone into your questions and our discussion today. Thank you for that very much.
Well, of course, and thank you. Great book and great work.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.